Hi, I'm Dr. Safaya, a medical doctor who doubles as an email marketing expert. In here, I take you behind the scenes of failed and successful email marketing campaigns. You get to see what these amazing individuals have tried that worked and didn't work in email marketing. If you've been curious and like me, you want to know what other people out there are really doing in email marketing, then join me as I go behind the scenes. We're live. So for today, we're going to be looking into how Rachel revamped her evergreen webinar sequence and what happened when she did so. There are a number of things that happened, and I'm totally sure you want to stay tuned for this. Now, Rachel, before we go into this particular webinar, I was going through your socials and I totally loved your travel highlights. And I was just wondering, what's your favorite place so far?
Oh, my favorite place to travel? Well, basically anywhere new. I love going to anywhere new. I do have a couple of favorites. I mean, one of them is probably England, just because my family's there and my husband's family's there. So it's always wonderful going to visit family. And I also just love Europe. I think it's the history. I'm a little bit of a history buff as well. So Europe is always one of my favorite places. There's so many different cultures within such a small area of land, different countries, lots of different food. So that's a big favorite for me, for sure. Anywhere where there's good food, though. Anywhere where there's good food and lots of cool things to look at, I'm there. I just love travel in general.
That's a good one. That's a good one. And I went through her highlights and I felt like I was literally traveling with her. And I advise that you also check it out. Now, moving forward, but Rachel has this very interesting business model, which I found very fascinating the first time she told me about it. I was actually really intrigued by it. And I'll just ask Rachel to share so that you hear it directly from her. So, Rachel, I'd like to hear about this amazing business model you shared with me and how you got here.
Sure. Yeah. So I teach people how to generate passive income, creating and selling what are called low and medium content books on Amazon. So these are books that are usually pretty repetitive in nature, books that we interact with. So some examples would be daily planners, journals, prompted journals, log books, guest books, coloring books, activity books, kind of anything that doesn't fit neatly into the fiction or nonfiction categories. And like I said, they're books that you tend to interact with by writing in. So sort of the Coles Notes version of this business model is that you go onto Amazon, you research to find out what types of these books people are already actively searching for, and then you create the books, upload the files to the Kindle Direct Publishing platform, which is a print-on-demand platform, and then when someone purchases one of those books, Amazon will print a copy off and send it directly to the customer. So it's very convenient for us. We don't have to deal with any of the customer service, any inventory, any minimum print runs or anything like that. So it's just been a very, very fun business model for me. I first discovered it back in 2014-ish, maybe a little bit earlier than that. And I started off with some nonfiction, then moved to fiction, and then I moved to low content, which is what I've been doing for the past few years. And since then, I've been teaching other people how to do it as well through my YouTube channel and also my digital course, Low Content Profits Academy.
I really love the model because it's the fact that you really don't have to bother about anything once you have created the content. So you create this planner, you're not worrying about logistics, you're not worrying about, oh, is the printing ready? Is it done? Amazon literally takes care of everything, and all you need to do is know how to actually like create those pieces of content and set it up. So I totally love this particular funnel. Now, one of the things I was wondering, right, so getting into our topic for today, Rachel did this thing where she has an evergreen sales funnel, right? And then she went ahead to redo her whole sales funnels. Now, I know redoing a sales funnel is definitely not easy. So I'm going to start by asking, why exactly did you decide that for this particular evergreen webinar, you wanted to redo the sales funnel?
Well, there are a few reasons. Firstly, the funnel was just getting old. The first version of this funnel I created in 2019. So I felt like, you know, this was just at the start of this year that I did that. So the webinar and the webinar funnel were 4 years old at that point. So things just needed to be updated. I've also learned a lot about the business model since then. So I needed to include updates that had happened, you know, in the KDP space. And I wanted to really increase the conversion rate. I also wanted to fix some leaks in the funnel. So over the last few years, I'd introduced several other freebies, several other lead magnets. And those, you know, once people joined my list from those particular lead magnets, they kind of didn't go anywhere. So I had people coming onto my list, but then they weren't actually going into the evergreen funnel. So I had to fix those leaks by directing people that came in through those other freebies into my evergreen funnel. And then the other thing I wanted to set up was a way to nurture people that entered my funnel, but didn't end up purchasing my program. Because most people, when they come onto your email list and enter the funnel, most people are not going to buy. It's only a very small percentage. In a lot of cases, we're talking like 2 or 3% conversion rates. So what happens to that other, you know, 90%+ of people that are just sitting on your list? Most people forget about those people. So I wanted to include an additional email sequence that would then nurture those non-buyers over the course of the next 30 or 60 days, and then reintroduce them to that funnel afterward. So those were kind of the main goals and objectives I had with updating this funnel.
All right. So when you say evergreen funnels, there are a number of things that come to mind, right? Different people have different interpretations. And so I just wanted to know, for you, when you say evergreen funnel, what did you have in mind per se?
It's basically a funnel that just runs on autopilot in the background. So the way a lot of digital course businesses work is they do live launches 1, 2, 3, sometimes even 4 times a year. And I used to do that, but I really wanted to find a way to make money that didn't rely on me showing up for these really intense live launches. So the way an evergreen webinar is set up is that it's just automated. So my webinar is pre-recorded. You know, people enter my funnel via a lead magnet, and then they are entered into a sequence where they are invited to my pre-recorded webinar. And then whether they do attend or don't attend, they're going to get an email sequence based on that. And after the webinar, they'll be given a sales sequence. So, I mean, it's a pretty complicated setup of different email sequences. You know, if the person does this, then they get this. If the person does that, then they get that. It's a pretty big undertaking setting it all up to begin with. And then, of course, when you're revamping it, there are so many different components that need to be revamped as well. But that's basically what an evergreen webinar is, just something that runs in the background without you having to be present. And I think for most of us, that is kind of the dream, to just have something set up where it's making money for you, where you're not having to show up in person all of the time. I mean, there's still, don't get me wrong, there's still a lot of work. I'm not like one of those marketing bros that's like on the beach with their laptop, but like, that's a beautiful picture, but that's not exactly real life for me anyways. So there's still work that goes into it, but not having to do those live launches for me was, it just suits my lifestyle better at this point. So,
and it definitely frees up a lot of time, because live launches, the preparation, the actual live launch, and then everything that goes into it can be pretty demanding. So yes. Now we are looking at this funnel, you say complicated. So how many emails are we looking at here? 10, 20, 40?
Well, so really there are 1, 2, 3, 4. There's like 5 different interconnected sequences. So the first one is my lead magnet sequence. So people usually enter my funnel by downloading my main lead magnet, which is 3 steps to publishing your first low content book in less than a day. Currently, this email sequence has 5 emails over 6 days. Now, during that sequence, on email 3, I believe, they get invited to my webinar called Publish and Profit. Now, when they register for my webinar, they're going to get a series of webinar reminder emails. Now, the amount of those that they receive depends on if they sign up for the webinar and they want to watch it on demand right then and there, they're not going to get any of these reminder emails. If they decide when they register they want to watch the webinar the following day, they might get up to 4 reminder emails. Most people watch my webinar on demand immediately, so most people don't get any of those emails, but they're there just in case. Now, once they attend the webinar, or if they attend the webinar after registering for it, they will get 8 emails over 7 days. This is my sales sequence. If they don't attend the webinar, then they receive 3 emails over 4 days encouraging them to re-register for the webinar. And then for anyone that does not purchase, they get put into this nurture sequence. And that's 11 emails over 31 days, which is basically just free content that they're given to keep them warm as leads. And then after that 30 days, they'll be invited into my webinar sequence again.
I like the intentionality of it, really. Like, you're following them throughout the customer journey based on the actions and behavior that they take. I mean, 5, 11. So if you're watching, if you're not watching, you're definitely having something to follow you up. And so with the nurture sequence, I'm just wondering, if somebody goes through all of this and still doesn't attend the webinar, what's the next touch point?
So that would be, they'd move into a second 30-day nurture sequence, where after that sequence is done, they don't get invited back to the webinar, they just get a sales sequence. So that can basically go on indefinitely. You can have it set up 2 of those 30-day nurture sequences. After that, they're just entering my regular list, and then they're just going to be getting, you know, my weekly YouTube video, email, my weekly newsletter. But I could, if I wanted to, just keep on running those nurture sequences. I could create 3 months worth, 4 months, 6 months, whatever. So that's something that's worth testing. This is my first time implementing that 31-day, 11-email nurture sequence. So I don't have the results of that yet, so it'll be interesting to see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 months from now what kind of results I've received from that. Right now, it's still a test, so I'm just waiting and collecting data on that. And then, you know, depending on what the conversion rate is for that, maybe I'll keep it going for 3, 4, 5 months. Oh, I was just going to say, it's really interesting to set things up in a way where you can kind of, you know, lift up the hood and see what's working and what isn't, and make changes based on this data. It's fascinating to me. And I like being able to pinpoint exactly where something is working or not working and make a tweak, see the results of that in the data.
Definitely, definitely. And now from these 2 nurture sequences, that means we're talking about 2 entirely different sets of emails.
Yes, entirely different. So the first nurture emails really are mostly just invitations to my webinar. That 30-day sequence, that is really just offering up free content. There's no ask. It's really just, here's this tip. You know, the next email is like, here's another tip on publishing these books. So it's really just free content. I believe there's 2 emails a week over the course of 31 days. So that is just pure value-added emails.
That's the emails from the first set of nurture sequence, and then the emails from the second set of nurture sequence. Right. So if the person doesn't get to convert from the first one, they're going to receive entirely different emails in the second set of emails.
Yes.
So when it comes to these 2 nurture sequences, it means that you have the first set of nurture emails and the second set of nurture emails, and they're getting 2 entirely different sets of emails. That's if they fail to convert from the second one and they go into the second one, it's an entirely different set.
Yes.
That's really great. So now what I want to know is, we talked about rebranding, redoing the old sequence and the new sequence. So what exactly did you change in the old sequence to be able to create this new sequence?
So the webinar itself, now I know that's not directly tied to the emails, but I did completely revamp my entire webinar from start to finish, re-recorded that. In my email sequence, I've noticed over the last few years, whereas my audience initially was all side hustlers, things like stay-at-home moms or people who were retired and looking to generate small income, people that had full-time jobs, or maybe they were working artists or something like that, looking to create this side hustle passive income stream. Now, over the last few years, my audience has expanded to also include people that are already running businesses and they want to create some sort of a low content book that will support another area of their business. So maybe they're a coach, like a health coach or something like that, and they want to create a health journal Or maybe they're a creator and they want to create a daily planner, you know, a branded daily planner, or they're a course creator and they want to create a workbook that goes along with one of their courses. So my audience has expanded into that area as well. So I wanted to be able to address that new growing audience inside of those emails. So that's one of the major things I changed. I would say those are probably the biggest changes. I did shorten them a little bit. You know, going back through them, it was like, wow, these are kind of long and kind of wordy. So I wanted to simplify and make them just easier to read and to understand. And then, yeah, the other main thing was just adding this entirely new nurture sequence so that I wasn't just forgetting about people that had entered my list and didn't buy the first time around. I didn't want to just forget about them. I wanted to make sure they were still getting some of the tips and strategies that I've learned over the years to keep them engaged. And, you know, maybe now is not the right time for them to buy, but it could be down the line. So I wanted to keep giving them information, knowledge that they could use for now and up until, you know, maybe they do want to purchase later on down the line. I just don't want them to feel forgotten just because they didn't purchase right away. So that was another big thing I wanted to change, is just adding this sequence.
I love what it is that you have going on. And I think the major reason why this resonates with me so well is the fact that at every step of the customer journey, whether they are just aware or they are at the point of making a decision or they are at the point of, you know, being converted, there is always an email sequence to drive them to take the next steps and to answer the questions that they may be having per time. And it's so intentional because a lot of times people feel like, oh, just, you know, do the emails, and then they just do the emails. But there is emailing for emailing's sake, and then there's emailing with intentionality where you actually care about the people. Like the term you use, you didn't want them to feel forgotten. So yes, you didn't buy, but I can still help you. So here is some content that can help you while you take your time to decide, or while I handle the objections that you may have and help you make that, you know, buying decision and all of that. So it's really, really intentional. And I'm wondering, to be able to execute this from getting them to watch the lead magnet and then doing that split where it's like, if you didn't watch the video, these emails, if you watched the video, these emails, what were the tools involved? What's your tool stack like?
I'm trying to think. I've got like so many different tools and softwares that I use. I'm like, oh my gosh, where do I start? So my main one, I would say, is probably Kajabi. It makes it easy because everything's kind of under one platform. So my email platform is Kajabi. My landing pages are all done on Kajabi. My webinar I've done on Demio. And then I need something called Zapier, which is a piece of software that allows Demio to communicate with Kajabi. And then my course, this whole thing leads to my course, Low Content Profits Academy, that is housed on Kajabi as well. So let me see if I'm missing anything here. I think those are the main tools that support this funnel. And of course, there are like a million other tools I use in my business, but I think that covers it for this webinar funnel.
So you do course hosting on Kajabi.
Yes, I will say though, Kajabi probably doesn't have the most robust tracking. There's trade-offs for every platform that you use. Like, I really like that everything's kind of under one platform, because one of the biggest pains in the butt can be just having to connect all these different programs together. So that makes it convenient, but it doesn't track everything. So there are certain pieces of data that I'm not happy with Kajabi's ability to track it. So then at this point, it's like, if I want to move on to some other piece of program to get better tracking, now it's like, oh my gosh, do I have to like rebuild this whole funnel again in another program? So there's always going to be a trade-off, no matter what tools you're using, convenience versus, you know, robustness of data and this and that. I think I get most of the data I need, so I'm generally happy, but I feel like, especially with email, actually, Kajabi's probably not the best. Something like ConvertKit, I think it's now just called Kit. I've heard some really good things about. There's some better tracking on that one. So I think I get most of what I need, but there's still a few bits and pieces that I wish Kajabi had that doesn't. Your business.
That's neat. Good for you to track and be able to see all the workflows that are ongoing in terms of how clients and customers are transitioning from one point to the other. Well, hopefully they get to add it as they do new iterations and updates, and then that will make it the software. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. If it could just do absolutely everything I want it to, that would be awesome.
That's what we all wish. So let's look at the conversions. Let's look at the results. For this extensive sequence, for what you had and what you've changed so far, I'd like to know what results or what it is you have seen in terms of data and statistics as against old versus new. So maybe what you had ongoing and then what it is you see now in terms of results that you're getting.
So there's been a few interesting things, and this is still a work in process. Actually, my assistant and I were just looking at one particular part of this email sequence literally like an hour ago, and we're already seeing things that need to be adjusted. So in general, when we made these changes, the open rate increased by 2%. So nothing huge, but a little bit of a boost. And really, percents do matter. You know, an increase in click-through rate of 2-3%, depending on how much traffic you're getting, can lead to hundreds or even thousands of extra dollars at the end of the line. So those things do matter. So the click-through rate overall increased as well by 2%. But what's interesting is when we go into the singular emails, one of the emails, which was the first webinar invitation email, in the old sequence, that had a click-through rate of 14%, which is quite good. Now that first webinar invitation email only has a 6% click-through rate. So that's actually dropped quite significantly. So that's the email we were looking at an hour ago going like, what's going on here? And I think I know why. So, we don't know for sure, but I'll just share what our thoughts have been. So in the original sequence, the email people got before the webinar invitation email had a chart showing my own personal earnings journey with low content publishing. So it showed month by month, you know, what did I earn the first month, second month, third month? And you could see it in like a bar graph, which is a pretty nice visualization of like how long it actually took to get to that point, what the numbers were. And then I actually removed that in this second version because I thought, well, this chart's a few years old now, so maybe it's not as relevant as it was. So that's my theory of why the click-through rate on the webinar invitation has decreased. So I'm going to want to go back in and take a closer look at two or three of those emails that are kind of clustered together and see what else I can come up with. But that was sort of one of our initial, you know, hypotheses is like when people can see my earnings chart, it's easier for people to envision for themselves. You know, they kind of get a sense of the timeline from this chart, like, oh, she started doing this in this month. And then, you know, it took this long to kind of build steam. So it's giving people kind of like a realistic look at what that timeline might look like for them. So I think it probably gets people kind of excited when they can look at this opportunity in that way.
Wow.
So that's kind of an initial hypothesis. So to test that, I'm probably going to stick that chart back in and see if that improves the click-through rate. So that's probably the most interesting thing I've seen so far, just in terms of the difference one small little tweak can make in a click-through rate, which of course is extremely important to get people to that webinar registration page. Now, the other thing is the webinar registration page itself. So that's not an email. You know, the emails send people to that page. And then once they're there, they're either going to sign up for the webinar or they're not. So that original webinar conversion page converted quite well, but over time, the conversion rate started to dwindle down to, I think, as low as 7%. Now, just for context, a landing page should be converting bare minimum 20%. So that had dropped pretty substantially. Now, when I initially revamped that webinar registration page, that did go up to 22%. So we are kind of in the good zone again. Now, a couple of months after that, I decided to change the name of the webinar. And when I did that, my conversion rate dropped back down to about 10%. So just a few days ago, I made some tweaks to the webinar registration page again. Now, I don't have enough data yet. I was hoping to get on this call and be able to tell you that that either increased or decreased it further. We don't have the data just yet because it's only been a few days. But I think the big lesson here that I've had to learn over the past few years, when you're looking at something as complex as a funnel, there are so many various components. And if just one of those things isn't working, you can feel like the whole thing is not working, or, you know, this whole thing has failed. When really, if you just go in and you can determine the different data points to look at and make small adjustments, that can be the huge difference between making money and not making money. And it can be very easy to just write off your entire effort if something doesn't work the first, second, or third time around. But so often it's one small portion of it. And if you change that one thing, then you're off to the races. That's why I love going into all of this data. You know, on the face of this new email sequence, it's like, oh, I actually, you know, overall increased open rate and click-through rate. But then when you dig into individual emails, it's like, oh my gosh, I actually dropped a click-through rate on one of these emails. So if I can fix that, then my overall conversion rate is going to increase further. So it's very worth zooming into these various minute data points, because little tweaks can make huge changes and really impact your overall revenue and your entire business.
Definitely, definitely. And I think what I'm picking here is that one, messaging is super important in terms of how it is you present information. So just changing the name. It could also have been maybe changing a subject line, but in these terms, it was the name. And then there was a drop, and then you changed again, and you're awaiting the data to see. Then secondly is the power of social proof. So I know you haven't tested the hypothesis, but if we look at it, we see that social proof is actually so important, and it comes in different forms. So having that visualization that helps people see, this is where it is that I can be, this is what I can get to, this is what is obtainable. Even though the data was old, we see that the email that had it still performed better as opposed to the email that didn't have it. I mean, we're still going to test it out to see, okay, so now that the picture is back in, what's the click-through rate like? Is it going up? But it just reminds me of the power of showing and just not telling, right? So you can tell people I made this, but then them seeing some evidence of it, it just flips it. It just changes the equation for them, because it's like, now I believe you more because I have seen it. I didn't just hear it from you. And so I feel like that's something that we really need to implement in our emails. Then the other thing is the fact that you took time to really go step by step. So you did this overhaul, and then you began to track the data. And then as you looked at things, you took out time to go into the nitty-gritty, right? So with the individual emails. And just like you said, sometimes people can feel like, you know, I did this whole thing, I'm not really seeing traction, and they trash it. But just taking out time to go in and look at it bit by bit, and you get to see that, oh, it's not that it's not working, but maybe this particular part needs a bit more fixing up. And then you get to increase those results. So I totally love the intentionality and the fact that you actually went bit by bit. And I think the last thing I want to say is, one thing I noticed you did was that you weren't changing so many things at once. That's after the overhaul. When you will notice something, you make this change, you see how it performs, you make this or that change. And I think that helps us to know what it is that is actually moving the needle. Because if we change like 3-4 things, you're now not sure which of those 3-4 things you changed that actually led to the impact. But if you change it like one at a time, then you begin to say, okay, in this sequence, I changed the social proof here. Let's put it back and see. Then you put it back, you track for a while. Then it's like, okay, now I've seen the results with this. Let me also add in this other thing or remove this other thing. And so as you do that one after the other, it then helps you to be able to, you know the exact thing that's actually bringing those changes. And that's one thing that I really love. And so I wanted to ask, you mentioned that you just changed a couple of days, you don't have enough data. How long would you usually give, right, for data to populate before you say that these are good enough numbers, or this metric is good enough for you to say you can use this as a benchmark against what it is you had previously?
You really want at least, I would say, about 500 people to go through the funnel to start getting data. Because the fewer and fewer people that you actually have going through the funnel, you're going to see like wild fluctuations from week to week. So just as an example, if I only get like 5 or 10 people in my funnel per week, you know, last week, maybe it converts at 50%. This week, it converts at 10%. But when you start getting hundreds of people through a funnel per week, now the data is going to be a little bit more reliable and you'll see more consistent conversion rates from week to week. So at this point, I don't know the actual number of people that have gone through the funnel off the top of my head, but I'm going to want to make sure that at least, and I think it's only been about maybe 180 or something like that. I'd want probably about at least 500 to go through it before I would consider the data reliable.
Okay, so it's more about the volume of people who go through it than the length of time the funnel is left for.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. So that's really good. Now, before we go forward, we've really taken time to analyze a lot of results and I really love it. But I just want to mention this. Remember, I talked about Rachel's business model, which I personally find pretty intriguing and I'm going to be exploring. But Rachel has a free masterclass, the same masterclass that we are diving into the results for. So the masterclass we've been talking about as the Evergreen Lead Magnet that has all of these email sequences attached to it. If you not only want to experience this webinar funnel, but you want to go ahead and learn how you can publish and profit without inventory, without shipping, no customer service, and no startup costs, which means that you don't necessarily need a capital, right? I need you to check the link in the description and sign up for this masterclass. It's free. And Rachel will be sharing how she made $500,000 selling simple, easy to create books on Amazon. And you don't have to write a book. I feel like that's the beauty of it. You don't even have to write like a whole book. You could do a journal, a coloring book, a workbook. It could be for your coaching service, whatever it is. But she's going to be teaching you that in this masterclass. So please catch the link in the show notes, sign up, experience the welcome sequence, because I mean, you've heard about how it was created. You should experience it. But more importantly, learn how to publish and profit from simple, easy to create books on Amazon. It's definitely an opportunity for passive income that everybody needs to explore. Now that we have talked about this, and I know you're going to sign up, we're going to be giving Rachel some rapid fire questions based on what it is we have talked about earlier. Now, I feel like the first one, she already talked about it a bit, so I won't ask her again, but I was going to ask you about launching multiple times or evergreen, but I already know your stance on that particular one. So we'll go to the question number two. So in my conversation with Rachel earlier, she told me about how she deleted 7,000 people off her email list, and it was like a third of her list. And in my head, I'm like, how did that go? And did you mourn the loss? Because I mean, that's a whole lot of people. We delete like 100 people and we're like, oh, my list, you know. So Rachel, how did that go? And did you have to, you know, like feel bad or any of those things?
I think a few years ago, I would have been really reluctant to do it because so many of us get sort of hung up on these vanity metrics of like, oh, I've got this email list of 50,000 people or 100,000 people. But you really got to look at the quality of the people on your list. And I don't mean quality as in like, you know, those people as human beings. It's more like, are they even getting anything from being on your list? You know, so many of us, we download this thing or the other thing from the internet, and then we kind of decide, you know what, this isn't really for me. So anyone that has an email list, over the course of time, there's going to be a certain number of people on your list. And I think the number is something like 30% annually is the churn rate for an email list, which basically means that after a year, and this is especially true in more mature lists, there's going to be like at least 30% of your entire list who are just disengaged. They're not really interested in what you're doing anymore. So it's not serving you to keep those people on your list because that negatively impacts your open rate and your click-through rate, but it's not really doing anything for the people that are just sitting there either receiving your emails and they're not really that interested in them. Or a lot of times they're not even getting the emails because they're going to their junk folder or their promotions folder, or they're not even opening them. And if you keep those people on your email list, not only does that affect your open rate and your click-through rate, but it affects your email's deliverability as well. If your email service provider notices that, oh man, only like 10% of people are actually opening this person's emails, they're going to stop getting delivered. So it's actually really good practice of conducting this list hygiene at least once a year. From what I've heard, if you're running ads, if most of your email leads are coming from ads, you might want to do this list hygiene twice a year.
Yes.
I hadn't done it in quite some time. So I had, I think it was about 22 or 23,000 people on my email list, and I was noticing negative list growth. So really, you should have a list growth rate. I think a healthy list growth rate is anywhere from between 1 and 3%. And mine was negative. So my list was actually shrinking. So that told me, okay, there's a lot of inactive subscribers. So when I went into my email list and I was able to filter out inactive subscribers, yeah, it was about 7,000 people. So those people aren't doing anything for me. I'm not doing anything for them. So let's cut them loose, let them back out into the wild. And so that's what I did. You know, a few years ago, that would have maybe felt like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, I worked so hard to get these 7,000 people and now I'm just going to slice them off my list. Now it actually felt good because, you know, at the end of the day, I want to feel good about the people on my list. I want them to feel good about being on my list. And if someone's on my list, they don't want to be there. Well, then let's just let them back out into the wild. They don't need to be on my list. So I've definitely noticed an improvement now. I'm still working on getting my list growth rate back up. So sort of earlier on in the year, the main way I get people onto my list is through my YouTube channel. And I took about 6 months off from YouTube. So my leads really started, they really stopped coming in. You know, I was getting 1,000 leads a month from YouTube and then it dropped down to like a couple of hundred. So that was significant. And I've only been publishing on YouTube again for the last, I think probably couple of months. So my leads are starting to pick up again. So I think my list growth rate went from a negative, oh gosh, I want to say maybe like negative 3% or something. Now it's at about zero. And then, so I'm hoping now that I'm building my leads again, I can get that back up to the, you know, 1 to 3%, and then it will be considered a healthy list growth rate again. But I mean, this is just something that we all need to be doing to keep our email lists healthy and make sure that our deliverability rates are good, our open rates are good, and our click-through rates are good.
Great. I mean, I like the fact that you say now it feels good, because a lot of people tend to hold on to those subscribers because it's like, I work so hard to get these people. But it's more in, what's more important is, like you said, the list growth rate. And I love that you mentioned it. Now to the next question, it's how long is too long? We've looked at this wonderful webinar, Evergreen Webinar Funnel, that has over 20 emails, if I'm not miscounting. And a number of times people are just like, just send one email, send two email. I don't want to send a lot of emails. But for what it is you want to achieve, how long is too long?
How long is too long, just in terms of like how many emails you're sending over how many days, or like how long the sequence is? I mean, I think in general, people need to send more emails. I know that hesitation of like, oh, but if I send two emails this week, people are going to get mad at me, or they're going to think I'm spamming them. That's not necessarily true. You know, I've got a couple of people I follow online. They literally send me an email every single day, but because their emails have value in them, I enjoy seeing those emails. And I don't always read every single one, but I'll read most of them. So I think the key is, if you're actually offering value to the email subscribers that you have, they want to hear from you. Also, people often need to see an offer multiple times before they take action. Most people are busy. Most people are like going through their email 100 miles an hour because there's 300 of them. They want to get through it. You know, they might see the first offer and like, oh, I'm not in the mood for this right now. And sometimes they'll see it again. Okay. Oh, all right. Yes, I forgot about this thing. So now I'm going to register for this webinar. People usually need to see those things multiple times. One thing I will say, which I have done with my sales sequences now, is I put an ability to opt out for particular campaigns. So this is kind of separate from the sequence that we're talking about right now. But when I run promotions where there's going to be 5 or 10 emails and it's a sales sequence, I will give people the ability to opt out of that entire sequence. You know, if I'm making an affiliate offer or, you know, I'm offering some other product and someone just doesn't want to hear about that promotion, they have the ability to click, you know, please don't email me about this particular promotion right now. So I think there are things like that that you can do just to enable you to send the volume of emails that you need to send, but also allow your subscribers to take back some of that control if they really don't want to receive those particular emails. So I think that goes a long way in just building trust, giving people the ability to make some of those decisions. If they feel like they're being hammered by emails, they have the ability to turn them off. So I think that's important as well. But in general, I think most people need to send more emails, not less.
Yeah, true. And I think that when you give people options, when you give them the power to make a decision, you see that they don't really take that decision anymore because now they know they can. And so it's like, oh, let me see what this person is talking about. But if I get tired, I can, you know, opt out. So they are not so much in a hurry to opt out anymore, as opposed to previously when it's like, oh, this person is bombarding me. But once you put the power in their hands, it's like, now it's your choice to make. They begin to think twice about, oh, do I want to opt out or do I want to see, you know, that kind of thing. And I really like it because human beings, like, behavior-wise can be quite interesting, really, based on the kind of things that we do and try out in marketing. But really understanding, you know, how people like to be treated, how they want to be, and how you want to make them feel, goes a long way in how it is you implement your email campaigns and the kind of things you do, just so that you show them that, yes, I value you, you know, your opinion matters, and you have the right to do whatever it is you want to do. And so once you show them those kind of things, you see that the way they relate with you changes, because it's like, this person understands, this person gets me, and all of those amazing things. So I really love it. So now we're down to the last question. And this particular question came because I binged your Instagram highlights, which I must say that I really love, right? So I was thinking, masterminds versus retreats, which do you prefer?
I mean, virtual is great just because it's convenient, right? But there's, for me, nothing beats those in-person retreats, because there's just something about being in the room with people. I mean, there's just an energy involved when you're in the room with people and you're all feeling excited. And, you know, there's just that connection that you can't get through a computer monitor alone. So as much as I'm an introvert and if I ever plane crashed and I was on like an island by myself, I'd probably be quite happy. Like, I really am an introvert who loves to be alone. And I usually have to convince myself to go to these things. And even on the plane, sometimes on my way to an event, I'm like, oh, why did I agree to this? Like, I could be home doing X, Y, Z. But then I always leave them feeling so pumped and so re-energized. And there's just something about being in that room with people where you can just have impromptu conversations and feel the energy. So yeah, I mean, as much as I am an introvert who loves to be alone, and as much as I resist sometimes going to these things, I do prefer them because I do love the ability to make those deeper connections. And I mean, some of the people I've met at these things, they've just become lifelong friends at this point, you know. We catch up with each other all the time over text. We're trying to plan other non-work related visits to one another's towns and cities. So that can go a long way, especially when you're an entrepreneur and you do spend so much time alone and you can feel very isolated. So making those connections, I think, is really important. And nothing really beats an in-person event for making those connections.
True, because I mean, I've happened to experience some of them, and you see that you spend a lot of time talking to some of these people, but just meeting them physically in person changes the dynamics of the relationships, because now you just seem to have known this person better. You get to see the person, have conversations, and explore different interests beyond what it is you did online. So definitely team in-person events as much as, you know, possibly can. And now, I'm going to tell all of you something. Rachel has shared so many things with us, but I feel like my best part were all the statistics that she dropped. She told us the average conversion rate for your landing page, how your email sequences should convert, what your list growth rate should be. And I need you all to take note of all of those numbers because they are really, really important, and they are important metrics beyond just your open rates and click-through rates that you may be tracking. These are some salient metrics that you may not even have considered, to start tracking them today. And while you're at it, go ahead and connect with Rachel on Instagram at Rachel_Harrisonson. And on YouTube, her name again is the same. And if you want to, like me, learn how you can publish and profit through selling simple, easy to create books on Amazon, go ahead and use the link in the show notes to sign up for her free masterclass, Publish and Profit. Rachel is going to be sharing how she made $500,000 selling simple, easy to create books on Amazon with no inventory, no shipping, no customer service, and no startup cost. I think that's like the biggest thing, no startup cost. And while you're at it, ensure you look out for the email that we're going to be testing, if it has the image or it doesn't have the image. And when we have those numbers, maybe we'll share with you, maybe not, but definitely be on the lookout for it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. And Rachel, it has been a pleasure having you here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sapphire.